For the Gematria of 506, we connect to the phrase Ahavat Chinam, unconditional love, and to the name of God, Vav Shin Resh, which connects to memory and also the patterns in our life where we've made the same mistakes over and over. Kabel Rinai Amcha Kadeinu Tahareinu Yorah Kufreshayan Sintet Nun. These six letters spell two Hebrew words. Kra Satan. Kra means to tear up. Satan is the name of the negative force that gives us free will. The same six letters can be rearranged to spell Sha'ar Katan, two other Hebrew words meaning small gates, and it's a reminder to us to guard our gates, eyes, ears, nose, and mouth, which are the entry points for the negative system. And the letters of the month of Adar, the Kuf that created the constellation Pisces, which in Hebrew is Dagim, fishes, and the Gimel that created the planet Tzedek, the planet Jupiter. Na Dibor Dor Yehuda Devavat Shalem Nun Gimel Dalet Yud Kaf Shin. Nun Gimel Dalet, through its gematria of 57, connects us to the Hebrew word zan, which means parnasah, or sustenance. Yud Kaf Shin is a sequence that takes back the energy we've given to the negative side through our mistakes. Barchem kacharem rakamei tikasa tami gamlem etet resh sadikach gimel. This sequence connects us to the Sephirah of Netzach and its attribute of eternal victory. Chasin kadosh b'rotucha ta'el adaka chet nun aluch.
My friend, could you please speak into the microphone a little more directly?
Yes, I'll bring it closer. Chet Nun Aleph. Chet Kuf Bet Chet Nun Ayin. The sequence connects us to the Sephirah of Hod and its attribute of appreciation and thankfulness. Yachid Ge'e Lamcha Ge'e Zofre Kedushata Yud Gimel Lamed Pei Zayin Kuf. This sequence helps speed the spreading of the wisdom of Kabbalah during this, the sixth millennium, during this, our generation. Shavatenu kabel Ushma shirat asem Yodera Kavav Shin Kufav Tzadi Yutav. The first two letters, Shin and Kuf, have a gematria of 400. 400 connects us to perfection and completion. The next four letters have the same gematria as the first verse, 506. And connect us to the phrase Ahavat Hinam, unconditional love, and also to the name of God, Vav Shin Resh. And we learn from this that making a correction in our actions, that once we've recognized the patterns in our life that repeat, and also injecting unconditional love in each step in our process, this is the path to completion and the path to perfection. And the eighth verse we say in a whisper, but I will say it out loud for the purposes of teaching. Baruch Shem Kivod Malchuto Le'olam Vayed. I'm now going to read from the Zohar, from the Parsha of Tazria. I'm reading from section 5. Surely a man walks in an image. Verse 14.
Incarnation,
astrology, meditation, all of that is built into the Anubha Koach. And then the Zohar, I read a verse each class to bring the energy of Kedusha, the energy of holiness. And we can proceed. Does anybody have any questions before I start? Today's class is called Tikkun. Tikkun is a Hebrew word that gets translated as correction. It's also a Hebrew word that is constantly used in a phrase, Tikkun Olam, the correction of the world. Tikkun means correction, Olam means world. And the typical understanding from within the Jewish religion, Tikkun Olam is correcting the world. That's what we are here to do. That is the work that Adam received. That is the work of the garden that Adam was supposed to do in the garden. And then after the sin and being expelled from the garden, we are still supposed to do the correction of the world. That understanding is not what Kabbalah teaches. So let's start with the beginning. With Adam and Eve eating something, whether it was wheat or grapes or an apple or four other different fruits that the sages have a disagreement about what was eaten. The essence, the concept of eating is the important aspect. Because what took place with the eating of whatever was the injection of some type of energy into Adam and Eve. And every human being since then has this understanding. What was injected into human beings was selfishness. There was a correction that was to be achieved by Adam and Eve when they were in the garden. And that correction was very simple. They had one negative commandment, no positive commandments, one negative commandment. And I apologize for using the word commandment because it's a corruption. The word is mitzvah. Mitzvah is a connection to the Creator. By not doing this action, not eating from the tree of knowledge, good and evil, Adam and Chava, Adam and Eve, connected to the Creator. When they ate from that tree, they disconnect from the Creator. A positive mitzvah, when you do the action, you connect to the Creator. When you're not doing the action, you're not disconnected, but you're not connected either. Adam and Chava had one mitzvah to not eat from the tree of knowledge, good and evil. If they had not eaten from that fruit, from that tree, the correction would have been completed during the Shabbat. Adam was created on the sixth day. The Shabbat was the final portion of creation, the manifestation. If Adam and Chava had not eaten from the tree, Tikkun Olam, the correction of the world, would have taken place 6, 8, 10 hours later, sometime during the Shabbat. But they did eat from the fruit. They did not have free choice about that. And that's a discussion that's taught in Kabbalah. Some say that they did have free choice about it. Some say they didn't. Had they not eaten from the fruit, everyone in our generation would have never manifested. we would have never been born into the world because it would have been unnecessary. We were all part of the soul of Adam and Chava at that action. If we were the part of the leg, when we walked up to the tree, we participated in the chet, in the sin, in the mistake. If we were part of the mouth, we participated by eating it. If we were a part of the nose, we participated by smelling it. If we were part of the brain, we participated with the thought of walking and eating. If we were in the hand, we participated by reaching for the fruit. Every human being, in today's world it's almost 7 billion human beings, every one of us have been and were part of the soul of Adam. And as we've talked in other classes, each of us, there's 613 parts of the body and 613 parts of the soul, and each of those have many layers. Each of us have a tikkun that is described as a level of consciousness of the Adam and Eve prior to the sin. When Adam and Eve sinned, Adam at one point was 100 feet tall and he fell to the level of 10 feet. 90% of our consciousness was lost. And since then, man has fallen to even lower levels, as demonstrated by the physical height of people. The tikkun that each person in the world, all 7 billion of us, have is unique to that person, because that person is unique to the 613 parts of the soul that is really made up of many different people, many different aspects that over the centuries and over the reincarnations we have integrated and made pulled together. So the name Hanoch, which represents the parts of my soul, that name resonates with my soul. It is an essence of my soul. And all of the parts of that soul relate to that. Over time, if I correct certain parts of that soul, I may get to a point where that name is no longer relative to the rest of the parts. Because when I go to sleep, if a part of my soul has corrected that day and achieved full correction, it won't come back. But another part of my soul, another aspect of somebody else, will come with me. And if enough of that change takes place, my relationship to my name changes, and that's when people change their name. When we talk about tikkun, when we talk about correction, we are talking about different levels. One level is what the share of the correction that is needed to achieve by Adam and Eve that removes bread of shame. And if you'll remember what bread of shame is, that feeling that we didn't earn the light while we were in the endless world, while we were in this wonderful beneficence, that there was never lack, there was just total happiness and fulfillment and unity. And in that frame, each of us, being part of Adam, have a correction. And that correction is our share of removing bread of shame. Now, every incarnation, we have made mistakes. And starting with the sin, starting with other aspects that Adam and Eve did that we participated in, starting with coming after the flood, and even before the flood, every lifetime that we live, we have made mistakes. Those must be corrected in order for us to reach the consciousness called Adam before the sin. So when we talk about tikkun, we are talking about correcting those mistakes. And every action that we do in this world is based on correcting those mistakes. Now, on a simplistic level, it's easier to talk about two levels of correction. For our share of Adam prior to the sin, those two corrections relate to two different things. One of those corrections can only be done by us, and no other human being in any generation. It is our correction, and nobody can return to the endless till we achieve it. There's no option. We will achieve it. We will be presented with the opportunity, and there will never be coercion. We will be presented with the opportunity. We get it right. We've achieved the correction. If we don't get it right, we're going to be presented with another opportunity.
Okay.
Yes.
Veronica's here.
Okay.
So she's going to introduce herself.
Hello. Hello, Veronica.
Hello.
Did you take this chair right up next to Everest? Put your jacket on the couch or
maybe you can get out. Okay. Sorry.
He's getting fuzzy in his old age.
Oh, is that what it is? I didn't realize I was getting old.
You're not.
We're about halfway through.
Thank you, Evelyn.
We did the end of the COLA, and now Ranok, our teacher, he's in Phoenix, right?
Yes.
He's teaching a class about tikkun.
Tikkun, which means correction. And I'm trying to explain the different levels. Since, Veronica, this is your first class, as it is for Vita, feel free to ask questions. Don't be intimidated. There is no such thing as an inappropriate question, and you will be helping. You will be helping the other students because they think they know things, having been through these various classes. But the only way you know it if you're able to answer a question. So by you asking questions and then them answering it, it helps them make the connection to the true information. And if they ask it, answer incorrectly, we'll correct it. Or maybe they know more than I. We just never know this. So we were talking about tikkun, and the way the Kabbalists attempt to simplify this concept. We have two aspects of correction that apply to the level of consciousness referred to as Adam before the sin. Those two levels is one that is totally unique to each of us. And no one else in this generation, in any other generation, no one else can ever do that correction. We will be given an opportunity to do the correction. If we do it right, no problem. We don't have to come back. If we do it not correct, we're going to be given another opportunity to do that correction. But it's going to be a little more difficult. And I'll explain this more in as I go on. The second part of the tikkun is the tikkun that we share for the part of the body of Adam that we were part part of. So as I said earlier, if we were the hand and picking the fruit off the tree was the action that we did that created the problem, we will have a tikkun measure for measure. So what kind of a tikkun would a hand have to do? It has to stop picking the fruit. Now, how do you relate that to your life? Maybe we'll go into, maybe we'll have time another time, we'll see. But the real understanding of that action, of that correction, is we share that correction with every other soul that was part of Adam's hand. So, if...
Question.
Go ahead, Bob.
So, if I was a finger of Adam, or a fingernail or something...
Right.
Are you saying that the people I will meet in this life were also closely related to that finger?
No. You may meet people who were closely related to that finger. What I was about to say, what does it mean for you to share the correction with all of the souls that come from the finger of Adam or the fingernail? And the answer is, if you reach, you're presented with that opportunity to correct this action of reaching for the fruit that Adam did. And in your lifetime, you're presented with that opportunity, and you decide not to do it. You decide, I don't want to go to that ball game, whatever the issue is. If you do not do it, it's not that you will be given another chance to do it. It's a one-time thing. Because someone else who was part of the hand of Adam will do that action eventually. The perfect example, we just came out of Purim. And the scroll, the story of Purim is about Queen Esther, who is the queen of Persia. And the Jewish people are threatened with extinction that was very real. And she had to go see the king without an invitation. And that was in order to save the Jewish people. That was her action, because she is a reincarnation of Sarah, our mother, Sarah Menu, Sarah the wife of Abraham. And Sarah was a reincarnation of Chava, of Eve. And so this is all the correction involved with that. So she doesn't have to go to the king Ahasuerus. If she doesn't go, someone else will come who has this correction to do. But it's her opportunity. She is supposed to be the one to do it, but she has free choice. If she doesn't do it, she doesn't get another chance. Someone else will be the savior of the Jewish people, and we'll call it the Megillah, somebody else. But that's neither here nor there. It's one of my poor jokes. She had the choice. It was under penalty of death to go to King Ahasuerus without an invitation. And she went, risking her life to save the Jewish people. She achieved that correction by doing so. Each human being and each part of the soul of every human being has these two corrections to do as part of removing bread of shame, as well as all of the mistakes that human being has made in all of the reincarnations that they have lived. But understand that the mistakes they've made in reincarnation number one are the same mistakes in number two and the same mistakes in number three. When they correct something, some aspect of that mistake, they correct all of the wrongs, all of the mistakes for all of the lifetimes. So it's not as impossible as it sounds. Now let's understand what is a correction. Have you ever been in a left turn lane and the guy coming towards you stopped to let you go in front of him? Have you ever had that happen?
Sure.
That's his correction. By his sharing that action, by his risking another accident, by his not doing proper driving, that sharing action that he did, in his consciousness, the only reason he would do that is to let you go. That was his correction of something he had done after the sin of Adam. The corrections are always very simple, mundane actions. They're nothing huge. Was it a huge thing for Esther to go see King Ahasuerus? She walked down 20 feet of hallway. Yes, she risked her life, and that's a huge thing. But the action itself is very simple. Another aspect of trying to explain correction, and I may have said this to you guys before, but with new people it's probably helpful to say it again. We've all seen tennis courts where the doorway is on one side, and sometimes people hit the tennis ball over the fence on the other side. So they have to walk all the way around the tennis court to go get the ball. And that's the tennis court's in a park, and you're walking through the park at that moment as the person hit the ball over the fence. And you're carrying 17 things, and you're late for a very important million-dollar business deal. And your consciousness, what you're thinking about, is rushing to your meeting, that you hope you don't blow the sale because you're late, and you're running and walking as fast as possible. And the people in the tennis court see you and yell at you, please pick up the ball. Now, if you are conscious and if you could see the future, you would know that your business deal depends on you throwing the ball back over the fence. But since we are not that able to see the future, we're following our normal process, which would be not stopping. I'm busy. You can walk around. You need the exercise. At least that's what they'd say to me because I'm so heavy. But ultimately, these simple, mundane actions is what correction is about. And that's why the idea of tikkun olam is not taught by the Kabbalah.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Is doing favors for others a correction?
A favor without an expectation of return? A favor without an expectation of being paid back? Yes.
For the correction.
Question.
Yes.
Is any sharing act a correction?
No. A sharing act, well, let me rephrase that. It's more than likely yes, but there are some times that just sharing is not a correction. But it's rare.
Help me understand that, teacher.
Why would you do a sharing act at all?
There are some people who would, and all of us at some time, would perform a sharing act or self-gratification, which is not a purely sharing.
And therefore it's not a correction.
Okay.
Let's take the example, somebody sits down to eat and they say a blessing before they eat the food. What's the reason that they're saying the blessing? It could be...
Some people would like God's grace.
Well,
Bob, what is grace? You don't. When you use the word grace, people in the room don't understand it. Can you define God's grace?
Remember, you'll be here all night.
Well, let's make it simple. God's grace is the Hebrew phrase Chokhma Nestar, hidden wisdom, concealed wisdom. That's what God's grace is. The joy of giving you, of handing you, of relating to you wisdom that's been concealed prior to this. But let's take the person sitting at the table saying a blessing before they eat the food. Sometimes they're doing it because they have a desire. So, you know, a four-year-old is doing it because he's getting all of the praise and glow of his mother's joy. How wonderful you said that. The 15-year-old who's saying it as a rote because he's been saying it for his whole life isn't doing a sharing act. He's doing a selfish act. It's just automatic, robotic behavior. But a sage says the blessing to activate the energy of the food so that he can share pleasure to the Creator. The Creator does not need his pleasure, but the only reason he's eating is not for his own energy, not to get the pleasures of the food, which are great, but because it gives God pleasure to know that he's eating to give pleasure back to God. That's a circuit of energy. God shares the food. He created the food for this sage's pleasure. The sage only eats to share that energy back to the Creator. That's called receiving for the sake of sharing. That is tikkun. But what I was starting to explain, this concept of tikkun olam, that I can go out and fix the world by changing the way other people work, by changing even the way I do things, but as a major concept, a major impact on the world, that's not tikkun, that's ego. Tikkun is a very simple act done with the consciousness of sharing with no expectation of receiving in return. The man who stopped to let you make the left turn has no expectation that you're ever going to return or pay him back. When someone goes and buries a dead body, he has no expectation that that soul, that body, is going to bury him. He has no expectation of it being returned to him. This is tikkun. And whether it's the tikkun on the level of Adam before the sin, or on the level of Adam after the sin, where it's between individuals that have harmed each other over the course of their lifetimes, each action of correction is shared by many people, except for that one that I mentioned earlier. But if you are born in the month of Adar, you have a correction that is similar to every other human being born in the month of Adar. If you were born on the 15th day of the month of Adar, you have a correction that you share with every other human being born on the 15th day of any Hebrew month. If you have a correction associated with the year of your birth, you share that with every other human being born in that year. If you were born on a Monday, you have a correction dealing with creating unity and stopping creating separation, which is what Mondays represent, that of separation. Every correction that you have, that each of us have, and we have many, more than we can count, truly. But remember, we're sharing our body with all of the different parts of our body. So it gets somewhat confusing trying to understand, well, if I'm making a correction about not pulling from the fruits, well, what does that have to do with my legs or the part of my body having to do with my shoulder? It's all part of that same concept, that same action. We are all of those parts of the soul are sharing the part of the body, all of the body. And so they achieve correction together. And that's why we go to sleep, and then when we come back in the morning, it's not exactly the same 613 parts of the soul that come back. There will be parts of the soul that will come back because they need to make correction on what actions this body is going to do this day. And it's presented as free choice. They will always have the free choice of either to do it or not to do it. Yes?
I have a question. Corrections are presented to us every day?
Yes.
Because sometimes my days go by meaningless. You know, like I wake up and I don't have nothing to do, I don't read, I don't...
Evaristo.
Nothing happened.
Evaristo. Evaristo.
Yes.
You never have a meaningless day. I know what you're saying, but I want to explain it to you. There is no action that takes place in the physical world that doesn't have a spiritual cause. Nothing you do is ever the same. You brushed your teeth this morning, I hope. You washed your hands this morning. You went to the bathroom this morning. You took a shower this morning. You do that every day of your life. Guess what? It's not the same thing. Why? Because the day, the energy of the day is different. The energy of the week is different. The energy of the month is different. The energy of the year is different. The energy of the people around you are different. Your soul is somewhat different. And all of that is done with a consciousness to achieve the correction as rapidly as possible. When you change yourself, which means you've done a correction, you've removed bread of shame, you've removed the pain and suffering that you caused another human being on the level of consciousness of Adam after the sin, you have changed yourself. In you, there are 7 billion sparks, one spark for each person in this world. When you change yourself, you change those 7 billion sparks within you. Each of those sparks turn on the light in each of those 7 billion people. Tikkun Olam, correction of the world, takes place one small correction each moment by you, or by him, or by her. Each of these small corrections changes every other human being in that generation. And that's correction of the world. That is how the world will be changed in order to manifest the Mashiach, to manifest perfection in our world. It will never be done with large actions, but only small ones. Yes, Evelyn.
Does so it never has to be necessarily a correction where you're interacting with someone else. It could be a correction that you choose to change within yourself. That
when you decide that when you decide that you don't like the character trait within you of selfishness, that's a big correction. But if you decide you don't like the character trait of constantly looking in the mirror, you're not affecting anybody else, but you're affecting everybody else. You're making the correction within yourself, but it affects every other person in the world. When we look at we do restriction, and we look at what is our motivation for the reaction, and we begin to understand ourselves, and we look at this character trait that is the cause of our reaction, and we say, enough, out of here, I'm throwing you away, I don't want to do this anymore. And you change yourself never to do that character trait again. That's correction. That's tikkun. It doesn't have to be with another person, but there are many that are with other people. Because your consciousness of being into yourself, your selfishness, more often than not manifests having hurt somebody in a previous lifetime. And that has to be balanced. This is what tikkun is. They're simple actions, but very difficult to do because they're your patterns. They're your habits. And if you are not conscious of these patterns and these habits, then you never achieve that correction. And you get to come back in another lifetime where you get to do that action again. Until you get it right. That's the subject of tikkun. When we hear about tikkun olam, which in the Jewish religion is spread all over the place, you know, let's save the ecology by recycling. Let's do, these are all great actions. And if somebody was not recycling before, and all of a sudden that motivation, that advertising program causes them to start recycling, it also depends on why did they start recycling? What is the consciousness of recycling? If they're recycling because they're going to get kudos from their mother and father, if they're recycling because the girl that they started to date is now going to go to bed with them, these are not corrections. They're veiling. The same action veils more and more people, more and more of their own self. We need to raise our consciousness and stop being robots. If we do an action because we know our motivation, and that's what restriction does, it causes you to look at your motivation, then whatever action you do is going to be done as a cause. It's going to be done as a motivation. It's going to be done as part of tikkun. It's not going to be done as a robot, as playing out the movie, as we talked about in the restriction classes. Yes, Evelyn?
I have a question, but it's about Tshuva.
Okay.
I don't know if it would be the right time to ask it now or not.
It's the right time. Otherwise, okay. You wouldn't have had the thought.
Okay, when you go back and try to correct something that you've done in the past,
right?
Is it an option to have not, like, for example, if you go to this cafe, you meet up with somebody, and you don't use restrictions, and you want to go back and do chuba within that moment, is it an option to do chuba and not go to that place at all, or is that kind of like a shortcut, or you have to do chuba and actually physically relive the moment?
There would not be an opportunity to not go there at all. Because there's a reason why your higher self has you in that room with that person at that moment. So the option to not go there isn't given to you. But whatever words you said to the person, that you can change. Whatever response and reaction you had to the person, that you can change. That is the purpose of tshuva. Literally, you go back to that past moment and change it so that when you return to the present, you have changed the movie completely. Now what you're playing, there's no chaos from that action anymore. There's no wake-up call because you have done the spiritual work of tshuva.
Is there a wrong or right way? When I know there's no wrong or right, but certain guidelines in regards to doing tshuva, or is it more?
Well, the guidelines are the four steps that we've talked about in the class on tshuva, but to repeat them very quickly here, if it's between you and God, then you verbalize the confession, I did wrong, and God forgives you. If it's between you and another person, you have to verbalize the confession, this is what I did wrong, and please forgive me. And if there's a way to make restitution, such as you stole something from somebody, then you have to make restitution and follow the Torah guidelines as to what is the restitution in those instances. But you start with the confession of, I did wrong, and I'm sorry. But it's not just being sorry, it's literally going back in your meditations and changing the action so that it never happened. And if it never happened, and you've done it at such a level that God himself will testify that you could never do that action again. I was talking with a student here in Phoenix who has been struggling with the issue of changing to be more kosher in her own home. And she just went out to a dinner with her company. And the meal that they ordered was pig something with cheese. Literally she became ill to her stomach being in that place with her coworkers because of where she has become with her own kashrut, with her own kosher. Now, obviously, she is not yet fully kosher, and she is not yet to the point where she is has changed completely. But the fact that she got ill to her stomach is an indication of the depth of her change, because she can no longer sit at a table where cheese and meat are put together. That's a major change. That's a correction. That's doing tshuva.
So, do you recommend doing tshuva on the same occurrence more than once until you feel okay with it, or is it usually just a one-time
thing? It's up to you to decide that. I recommend you do tshuva on major issues, on issues that you truly feel guilty about, on issues that you are truly uncomfortable from your life, that you know you hurt somebody and you really today feel horrible about it. It's a bigger item. You do that. You don't do tshuva on whether you brushed your teeth this morning or not. You understand what I mean?
I have a question. Where will the, like, if a person who killed somebody and they go to jail,
yes,
the punishment in jail will...
is a form of cleansing. It is a form of correction. It gives him the opportunity to think about it. It gives him the opportunity to change it. Although in our society, it is really unfortunate the way our society deals with jail. In the Torah, there is no jail. There is no place. There is forms of death penalty. There is forms of fines and financial issues. There are forms of lashes. But there is no jail. The closest you get to jail is the concept of a city of refuge, where if somebody is responsible for a accidental death, they have to get to the city of refuge before they are killed by the blood avenger, the closest relative to that person who died. And if it's determined at their court that they were not responsible for the accidental death, that it truly was an accident and they had no malice beforehand, they didn't want it to happen, then they have to stay in the city of refuge until either the Kohen Gadol dies or they die. And it's the similar process of you're uprooted, your family gets uprooted, they have to move to a whole new city that they don't know anybody, how do you earn a living? All of these other issues that come into the play of a person changing location. And so it's all part of that. So if somebody kills somebody and he gets sent to jail and he gets the opportunity to rethink and to feel badly about his action, and he can do tshuva, if he truly achieves the tshuva, he won't have to stay in jail. He'll get paroled. If he hasn't done tshuva, then the time he spends in the jail is a cleansing for him. But it isn't a total correction. It's a partial correction. And that's why it gets to be very complicated trying to figure out, oh, this is what I have to do. No, what you have to do is do restriction as much as you can every day. When you do restriction, then the action that you do, being the pro-action, will be the correct action. It will be the action of correction, of tikkun.
By eating the various spiritual food, am I enduring a correction?
No, what you're doing is presenting yourself in a place of balance so that you can do correction. Remember when we had the plagues in Egypt, and the Torah says that God hardened Pharaoh's heart. We don't really, it's very difficult to understand that phrase, to truly understand what was going on. But Pharaoh is the king of Egypt. He has the responsibility for his people. And they've just been experienced a plague. They've lost money. They've lost children. They've lost lives. They've lost livestock. They've had a week of chaos like none of us have ever had. And here God comes and hardens Pharaoh's heart. And what the Zohar explains is that God made Pharaoh forget the plague. He forgot the pain so that he could have free will. Because when you're in pain, you cannot have free will. When you're in pain, you are going to be reactive to that pain. Free will means you're in balance and can choose A or B. When you eat the proper spiritual food, you are bringing balance to your body. so that when you are presented with a choice of A or B, there's no pain. You're not going to be reactive. You have the opportunity to be restricted, to do restriction.
Wise enough.
Exactly.
A question.
Yes, sir.
When the Pharaoh's heart was hardened, was God providing the Pharaoh with balance?
Yes. He was bringing him to a level where he could achieve free will. If you remember the class in the Anabakoa where I talked to you about Rabbi Berg walking around the building of the Palestine Liberation Organization.
Right.
Because the people in that building had been raised on hate for many generations, two or three generations. There's no way they could make an action or decide something out of free will when they'd been programmed for two or three generations to hate. So by bringing the Anavakoach into that building, that hatred was forgotten. They were able to achieve a free choice, free will choice, and they chose to sit down at the Oslo Accords, as we discussed. But it's that same idea. When you're in pain, you cannot make a free will choice. You are going to be reactive. That's why we teach. When you're in pain, what do I teach you as restriction? Ask for more pain. Is it really a free will choice to ask for more pain? Of course not. But that pain that will come to you will cleanse faster. Because the pain is cleansing. God forbid you need to have this cleansing. There's better ways. Free choice is a way that you can avoid pain and suffering. But you have to be on a level to achieve free will, to achieve free choice. And that's all of these actions that we do are always related to tikkun, correction. The universe is in a very efficient system. It's not going to say, oh, go ahead and do something that's a waste. It's going to bring you together with the people you need to make correction with. And then it's going to present you with a situation where you can do free will. If you're out of balance, if you're coming from hate, if you're coming from pain, at that moment you will forget the pain. At that moment, you will forget the hate. And you'll make a decision called free will. In Pharaoh's case, he wanted nothing to do with letting the Jewish people go. So his free will was more chaos. Seems unfair, doesn't it? But it's not. This was where his consciousness is. Or was. What is truly free will? Making the decision the way you want. I'm madly in lust with this woman. I want no other person in the world but this woman. Do I have free will when it comes to her? She's going out with my best friend. Where is my free will? But is it what will happen is I will forget that lust at that moment. And immediately after, it'll come back to me. Every instant, Hashem recreates the universes. But he doesn't necessarily recreate them in exactly the same memory that I had yesterday, 2 minutes earlier. He creates a memory that gives me free will. And then the next memory, I'm back to where I was. But I have done this action, whatever that free will action was. Did I correct something? Great. I didn't correct something. No problem. I get another chance. It'll be a little harder, but I still get another chance. I get to come back to this lovely world of pleasure. And it is a lovely world of pleasure. Just sometimes very hard for us to see it. Any questions? Yes.
In regards to the name, the energy that is used within our name.
Yes.
What? How do we select? Since I have a middle name and I have my first name, how do you know which name you should go by?
You go by the name you go by. It's not a question of deciding. The person who gave you your names at the moment you were given that name, that person was given Ruach HaKodesh, Holy Spirit. That person was able to look into your soul and give you a name that fits your soul. As you age, as you make correction, as you achieve tikkun, your name may no longer fit you, in which case you'll know that I don't like my name anymore, I want to change it. What are you called? What do your friends call you? I know your father calls you by a name that you don't introduce yourself as. I don't know if I should call you by the name your father calls you or by the name you've introduced yourself as. I never asked you the question. I assume...
I call her mi corazón. I call her mi corazón means my heart.
I understand. But you call her Ruby. And on her email she has Ruby. But she's always introduced herself to me as Evelyn. And it's no big deal to her whether I call her Evelyn or something else. So it's not yet meaningful. But at some point in her life, she will decide. But what was the name that you gave her at her birth?
Oh, Evelyn.
Evelyn.
Evelyn Ruby.
Okay. So Evelyn Ruby means that she has two aspects of her soul. Otherwise, she wouldn't have the two names at birth. The two aspects of her soul, each of them have a different correction, and you have that for both of those corrections to achieve. And you share with every other person named Ruby and every other person named Evelyn those corrections. But you have one correction that is yours alone, and you have others that you share with other people. Any other questions?
We can I take a moment to describe our questions?
Sure.
We exhibit a high art to ask the question.
That
looks
very
clumsy sometimes, but we ask really good questions. We encourage each other to bring up your wildest question about the Kabbalah, about religious traditions, about things that are happening that are hard to explain. And
psychic phenomena.
What brought you here to the Kabbalah? If this is an abrupt change in your spiritual tradition, why is the Kabbalah interesting to you? And if you run out of questions, you can always ask Hanok about his spiritual unfoldment and what brought him to the state that he's at. He loves to tell that story. He's actually, our friend Hanok is actually part of a worldwide, he's actually fostering a worldwide school right here on the web. This is part of it. He has a great story to tell. And Hanok was living here with me for like 10 weeks, another week, and we became friends. And so if there's ever a moment when you don't have a question or you feel sheepish or hesitant to ask, we stumble every week coming up with questions, but I think three of us, you two are new this evening, but the three of us have been here for since day one, right? Ever since we
come
to December? Yeah. And we have our best, we always learn wisdom, and I think we're unfolding spiritually and growing spiritually, and we definitely are prospering by the ancient wisdom that that's being shared with us. But half of the joy that we experience in these classes comes from the question. The reason is, we're all in a different place, and we're all have come up to a point in life where maybe we don't have an answer, and maybe finding an answer means we have to find a question. And it's been amazing how similar our lives have been, at Resto, and the type of things that we've experienced. And I was a Christian for 30 years. Well, a born-again Christian for 30 years. And I made an abrupt change. And
I'd like to just interject. I don't mean to change the direction. We never know where people are and whether they're comfortable. So for both of you new ladies, feel free to say this is not comfortable for me, or it is. Feel free to ask questions. You will never ask a question that's inappropriate. But I would like to mention one thing that is an intellectual discussion. And I rarely give intellectual discussions because Kabbalah is not about intellect. Kabbalah is about a personal experience of the Creator. And all of the tools are designed to reach and give you that personal experience on whatever level you want. Some people want to do etheric travel. Some people want to know what God wants of them in the world. Everybody has a different approach. But I find that this question that I'm about to ask you, and there is an answer to it, but I don't want to give you the answer. I want you to think about it. And the question is, what comes first? The answer or the question? Earlier in the class, I'm sorry?
It depends on the person.
No. No. There is a clear answer to this. I didn't hear.
Answer comes first.
In our world, it appears that the answer comes first. Excuse me. You are right. The answer comes first. But in our world, it appears that the question comes first. We ask the question, and then the answer comes. But in reality, the answer wants to be revealed. It's a spiritual request. The answer wants to be revealed. And therefore, it causes our higher soul to have us ask that question. It's a way of seeing the world and understanding cause and effect that is very different than anything else you've ever been taught. It is the only way we can experience the Creator is to look for cause and effect, look for the spiritual cause in every physical action. The Zohar says, a blade of grass does not grow without an angel hitting it and telling it to grow. Nothing happens in our world without a spiritual cause. Start looking for the spiritual causes. As Bob said, you know, what brought you here? I can answer you, because no one ever comes to Kabbalah and stays that is not in pain. There are people who come to my classes and they leave because the root of their soul and the root of my soul as a teacher is not compatible. They will find a teacher that is compatible because that's the nature of when the student is ready, the teacher appears.
I have a great question.
Let me finish one other thought. I've had people who come to my class as an intellectual exercise. It's interesting to them. They're curious about it. Those people will find a few weeks of classes and then they'll leave, because this is not a class for intellectuals. It's a class for experientials. I teach you to have a personal experience of the Creator. That's the purpose of these classes. That is what Bob referred to as my starting certain things. I have learned with the Kabbalah Center. I've been taught there. I have learned with the B'nai Baruch group, different aspects of Kabbalistic teachings. What I teach, I believe, is very different than what they teach. There is a tension between your personal experience of the Creator and your communal experience of the Creator, of community. You have walked into a class that is really in balance between those two. All of these people have personal experiences of the Creator from before. It's been enhanced by the teachings. And at the same time, they're building and developing community. So you are more than welcome to be here, and I hope you'll consider continuing. What's your question, Bob?
You mentioned... Briefly, you mentioned the word tools, and to me, that means several things, but to others, it may not mean anything. Could you mention, like, one sentence about each of the tools you're referring to?
Well, there's 20 weeks in these classes. The first 2 weeks, as I mentioned earlier, brings people to the same level of vocabulary, and all of the classes are recorded and they're available online at the website, and after I hang up, you guys can get all that information from the three people who were there. But the rest of the 18 weeks is a tool. Each week there is a new tool. Each week the purpose of the tool is explained. The tool is something that I'm requesting that you try and experience it in your life. I'm not trying for you to become Jewish if you're not. I'm not trying for you to convert. I'm not trying for you to do anything that's uncomfortable for you. But each tool will enhance your life. Each tool will be made available to you to reduce the chaos in your life. One of the interesting, what I find interesting in the Talmud, they have a sections where the various sages describe what they consider chaos in their life. And one of the things that they say is, of course, the loss of a child or a parent is chaos. It's painful. It's uncomfortable. And I know that's not even strong enough language. And then another one will say illness is chaos. And another one will say financial loss is chaos. And they all go through the various forms of what we know is chaos in our lives. And then there's this wonderful sage who stands up and he says, sometimes I reach in my pocket and I intend to get 3 coins to give as a tip to the waitress. And I pull out 4 coins, or I pull out 2 coins. That's chaos to me. Now, if we truly asked ourselves, would we consider that chaos? Of course not. But what is he really teaching us? This world is supposed to be perfect. If you want 3 coins, you should get 3 coins. You shouldn't have to wait and reach in your pocket again. If you want a soulmate, you should have your soulmate. If you want a child, you should have a child. Why do we have to wait? Why do we go through this process? One is to learn to appreciate the process. If we look at a tree and we look at a peach tree, and the peach bud comes out. For the next 2-3 months, I'm not sure exactly how long it takes for a peach to grow, that bud is bitter. It's green. It's not pretty. But when the peach is ripe, when it's ready to be picked, it's an amazing pleasure to eat a fresh peach. Appreciate the process of the growing of the peach. It also enhances the eating of the peach. Are there any other questions? I will just mention, and I usually don't, but since with new people, all of what I teach is called Torah. And in my opinion, in my worldview, Torah can never be charged for. It was given to the Jewish nation at Sinai, and at that same instant, it was given to every one of the other 70 nations. It belongs to every human being. But we live in a society that my bills have to be paid just like yours do. So I do request donations. You can make a donation through a check, mailing it to the address that's on the website. You can do it through PayPal. You can do it through cash. If you wanted to give one of the other people some cash tonight, they will extend it to me. However you want to do it, and also know that if you don't wish to make a donation, there'll be no reason. No one is turned away from these teachings because they're unable or unwilling to make a donation. During the course of the classes, you'll learn that energy needs to be exchanged for energy. Otherwise, there's something called bread of shame. But that's not important at this point in your knowledge of Kabbalah. Any questions before I hang up?
Okay, real quick. I got an invitation from this organization. They call it purification. They present psychic phenomena and also exteriorization. Once this person is clean through this meditation or auditing, they call it auditing.
Right.
Once this person is clear, then they can also go through exteriorization. And is that something that we want to learn about exteriorization? And
I don't teach what they're teaching because my understanding through the teachings of the Kabbalah is it's going to be from a negative place. But if you want to get a jump start on it, we're in our 16th or 17th week out of the 20 weeks. So after that, assuming you guys want to continue, and I hope you will, we go into advanced courses, and we can choose many different subjects, one of which there's a series of 5 lectures that is on the website called Psychic Phenomena, Psychic Abilities, and Ruach HaKodesh. And in those 5 classes, I explain the spiritual system, why people have psychic abilities, which is part of their correction. It's a tool they need to utilize. How they can come to understand it, how to utilize the spiritual system, how to understand the spiritual system has negative aspects, and the negative entities that are given permission to fool human beings in order to siphon off their life force energy. It's all part of the system. It's explained in those 5 classes. When it comes to psychic experience, if you want to go learn etheric travel, we'll direct you into the right place to get etheric travel on a positive place from a positive teacher, or experience it on your own. When I first started teaching, I received a series of classes, 40 of them, explaining all of the different levels of meditation and psychic phenomena. and I was asked to promise that I would never teach that because I didn't have the experience to help my student. And my answer was, of course, I will not teach it. That teacher has started to loosen up those rules. So if you have a reason, you have something that you want to go directed, give me a call, send me an email, let's start a conversation, and I'll find out what is the best place for you to go to learn what you want to learn. And I'll give you that information. It may be with me. It may be a step-by-step, that some of the first steps I can give you, and other steps I'll have to direct you elsewhere. But all of that information is available in the Kabbalah. And in the other systems, they are not necessarily clean. And as they're saying, this someone has to go through a procedure of cleansing. Is that a correct procedure? I can't answer you. But I can tell you that the procedures taught in Kabbalah are correct. Did I answer your question, Evaristo?
Yes, you did.
Any other questions? I hope you two new people will stay and ask questions about how we do it, what we do, and so forth, so you get a comfort level. And I look forward to seeing you all next Monday. Have a beautiful week.
Bye, Adam.
Thank you, Adam.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.